Hi everyone, and welcome to First Rank Fire. This is a podcast that gives me the chance to chat with some of the coolest people from around the 40k community. I'm your host, Ben, and in today's episode, we're going to be chatting with the best Death Watch player in the world, and he always will be to me, no matter what, how often he plays it, or when he doesn't play it for a season. I thought that he would be always be the best Death Watch player in the world to me. Not only is he one of the most competitive people in the community, he's probably trained most of the others as well at some point or another. And while there are a lot of competitive players who are considered probably quite negatively, I'd say that probably my guest today is one of the some nicer people in the communities, that's for sure. Welcome to the show, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I'm a little bit taken aback. That's some of the nicest stuff anybody's ever said about me.
I'm glad. No, it's all well deserved. It's all completely true. So, yeah. Yes. I always like to start on a high. It gets high, happy, and then they can hate me by the end when I've asked all the awkward questions.
Yeah, so. I like it.
Yeah. Start high and then go from there. But yeah, thank you for joining me today. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate the time. And this one's been a little while coming. You've been insanely busy with 10th coming along, the end of 9th, and then 10th coming along. So
yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, no worries. I've been looking forward to it. I do love podcasting and chatting to all sorts of different people in the community. So yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much. Well, I'll kick off the first question. So what originally got you into Warhammer?
Okay, all right. So the very first thing was a video game called Fire Warrior.
Okay,
yeah. On the PlayStation 2. I don't know if any of you remember it, but you played as a, surprise, surprise, Fire Warrior, and you fought your way through hundreds of guardsmen, you know, a bunch of space marines, terminators, greater demons. Anyway, so you killed a bunch of stuff as a Fire Warrior and used all the different weapons from Warhammer, and it was my first entry into the world of Warhammer.
Okay.
And then I picked up the book that the game was based on and started reading that as well. Yep. And that was my first exposure to the literary side of things. But I didn't actually start playing Warhammer as the first Games Workshop thing I played. I actually started playing the Middle Earth strategy battle game.
Yeah.
Which is probably still their best game, let's be honest. So I started playing that, and then I picked up some Tau along the way and started playing games. And it went from there, really. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Did you ever have any like breaks from the game or anything like that? Or was it just you started and that was kind of it from there on?
There was kind of a break during my A-levels. Yeah. So some of my mates that played, they went to different places to study. And then I kind of didn't have a gaming group. So there was a break then briefly. And then just as I got into uni, I wasn't playing that much. And then I kind of picked it up again. Because it turned out that I went to somewhere that had a really big Games Workshop store and community. So, okay. Yeah, that's how it all happened, yeah.
That's pretty cool. I think you are the first guest that's ever got into it through Fire Warrior, of all things. Yeah. Battles for Middle-Earth, that seems to be like their common... Probably over half of the people I've spoken to, Battles for Middle-Earth has been the thing they've got them in, which I always say, it really surprises me, because when I was a kid, it was just I don't know why. I got in through fantasy.
Right.
And even though I was big into Lord of the Rings and fantasy and stuff like that, I never really paid attention to the game. So
okay.
Completely passed me by somehow. But yeah, I've heard from multiple different people that it's supposed to be one of the better rule systems and game systems that GW do, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I still play it to this day. Okay. I sold my armies for Lord of the Rings when I started playing 40k properly, and then in recent years bought them back as I met a new group of players that started playing it. And now Steve's even talking about playing some Lord of the Rings. So
that was going to be my question then. It's like, yeah, if you guys are then starting to play it, when's it going to be on VT?
It's not too far away, I expect. I got asked about what books were needed to play the game recently. So
okay. Yeah, Steve seems to be quite open to sort of doing that. I felt like I started back in 8th, but I felt like VT was like a really solidly 40k, and now you're obviously playing Age of Sigmar. That felt like a bit of a swing. So yeah,
it's interesting. I think it's because the teams expanded, so there's been less of a need for individuals to focus on solely 40k. We can enjoy the odd game as something else. Steve, he's probably already mentioned it. He loves the game Zombicide.
Yeah,
which I'd never played before meeting him, and it's a fantastic game. But there's other systems out there that we want to explore as well as 40k. But obviously, 40k is our main thing.
Yeah.
And always will be, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess it's what you've kind of built your sort of community around, so it makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, it's always good to have a bit of variation for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So obviously there's quite a lot to this hobby, and obviously you're more so than a lot of people because you've got VT and stuff like that as well. So what would you sort of consider your favourite part of the hobby? Collecting, building, painting, gaming, etc.
I mean, this is a really good question. So I love converting models. That I do like. I've never got into like the green stuff sculpting. I'd love to. I've done a bit of fur on some Lord of the Rings miniatures, weirdly, but I've never gone further. I'd like to. Painting has always been sometimes I love it, sometimes I hate it.
Yeah.
I expect that's the same case with a lot of people, right? I've come to terms with the fact that the models are going to look terrible about halfway through the process, and then they're going to look good. So if I know what I'm painting and I know the steps, I do enjoy painting. I love the outcome.
Yeah.
Absolutely love the outcome. When the model's finished, you get that feeling and you get to put it on the table, and then you immediately take it off the table because it's first game.
Yeah.
It dies. Yeah. But I think playing games with people, ideally painted armies, but really it doesn't matter. It's the playing with people. Yeah. It's the human interaction. And then that next step for me is when you go away and maybe you just go to the pub after a game.
Yeah.
You have a drink, or you're at a tournament, you go out for dinner with people. That, just the bonding, the social bonding side of it is incredible. Yeah, that's my favourite part, is playing and interacting with people.
Yeah, there's so many different people to play, I guess. I was chatting with, literally as we were recording this yesterday, the guys who've sort of come up with Battlebox.
Yeah.
They were sort of saying, they took really big breaks. Similar to me, they took sort of, I think James was saying he took 10 years, and Ali was saying he took like 15-year break, massive breaks. And so the big thing that they saw coming back in was they felt like the community had really changed and grown. Mm. There was a lot more variety within the community. And I think that it's like, I think it's really good for Warhammer, because you need that. But B, I think it's like having that one thing in common. You do get so many different people. I think it's a really fun way of meeting new people with new ideas, with new hobbies and things like that. Yeah. And then you see that rock climbing becomes the next big thing in Warhammer players, because there seems to be so many.
Apparently, yeah. I mean, I'd love to do it, but I have no idea where I'd do it locally.
Just find some random rocks.
Just find some rocks, climb them. Yeah, that's safe. Yeah, no, I think it's amazing. So I've met some crazy people, like the head of marketing for PlayStation.
Right.
Like, what? Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's people who can't even talk about their jobs, like TSA related and stuff like that. And it's just like, these people just play Warhammer. They go to a table and they paint miniatures and they roll dice just like the rest of us. And you know, and there's teachers, loads of teachers in the game. So, you know, massive love and respect for them. And it's crazy, all the different walks of life that play the game. Love it.
Yeah, even Henry Cavill. I'm going to bring him up every single time. I'm going to get him on eventually. But like, you're right. It's that sort of thing. It's incredible who just like pops out the woodwork. I mean, like Robin Williams was a huge one. He played tons of Warhammer. In the UK as well. He came into the UK quite a lot, apparently, and played quite a lot in a lot of UK stores, which is just strange to think about.
Mad. Absolutely mad, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, he was a lot of fun to play against. He was really quite narrative and like twisted stories into his games and voices and stuff.
Bet. Yeah, he would have been awesome to play. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You've played a lot of different games and a lot of different people. Have you got a particular sort of favourite army you like to play?
Oh, I thought you were going to say that you've got a favourite game. And I was like, there's too many to... I'm not going to remember all of those.
Yeah.
Favourite army I like to use? God. Well, I've used Death Watch a lot, but I feel like picking Death Watch is just because I've had more experiences with them.
Yeah.
In terms of the funnest game... Tyranids are fun because you get to be the bad guy, but you also get to be absolutely slaughtered in the thousands, and your opponent always has a good time.
Just sweeping models off the board.
Exactly. Guard. I've always enjoyed Guard.
You've got a lot of Guard going up on your Instagram at the moment, haven't you?
So I've got a collection of Guard, a Talarn-themed army, and it's fully painted. There's like 5,000 points.
Nice.
But the new sculpts are so incredible, and the new support for the range is so good. I couldn't not start a new army for them. That, you know,
yeah.
And I've loved painting different genders, different color, different skin tones. It's just been an absolute joy to look at that side of things and paint that army up.
Yeah, they look great. They look absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. But I'm all about the little man doing stuff in the big, yeah, big world of Warhammer 40K. So when you get that one sergeant that, you know, throws a grenade, kills a dreadnought or something.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. I think one of my characters once, it was a company commander, survived an entire round of shooting from a Baneblade. An enemy Baneblade. And I was like, baller.
Yeah, give that man a promotion.
Baller. Yeah. And then I think the same guy later in the same tournament killed a bike captain, bike shield captain on bike in combat.
Wow.
Like, yeah, that. Whew, I ain't topping that. Unfortunately, he fought on death and killed him back. But I tend to ignore that part of
the yeah combat. Yeah, that never happened.
That's lame. Yeah. Guard. I think guard. Oh, everybody loves playing against the guard. They can engage with the army and how it works. You know, it puts people off when I say this one's got a wife and kids and start shooting. And yeah, I love the guard. Very cool.
Okay. Obviously, you do play a lot with your Death Watch. Which kind of what draws you towards playing them if they're not necessarily your favourite army?
So they're definitely up there with my favourites. The original reason I started playing them was because I couldn't A, afford to play lots of different Space Marine armies, and B, I wanted to do so many different Space Marine armies that, you know, it'd be impossible, right? So
yeah,
Death Watch has that beautiful way of using chapters from everywhere,
yeah,
and having them all in the same squad. So that's the main reason. I think I was looking at, I think it was 6th edition, and I had like an old guard army, and I wanted to run Inquisitors, so I ran Inquisitors. I had an Inquisitorial Land Raider, nice, and I wanted to run Death Watch, but they didn't exist at the time. So they just had metal upgrades. So what I did is I played an allied detachment of normal Space Marines as Sterngard veterans and painted them up as Death Watch.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's a good way to do it. Yeah.
And then not too long later, the box set came out with the Cole and the Death Watch in it. And I was all on board. And then as soon as the Death Watch stuff came out, I was like, this is my army. I'm playing these. Played them for a few years. Actually, my first ever tournament win of at least 30 players was with Death Watch, and it was 2 weeks after their codex came out.
Nice.
For the very first time. So that is a memory. And then I played them for a couple of years, and then I went off them for a bit, and I came back to them maybe a couple of years ago, 3 years ago maybe,
okay,
I think.
So sort of in, was that 8th, or is it, are we into 9th?
Maybe 8th, I can't quite remember, but that's when the legacy began. Yeah. Yeah. I'd love the character, like each veteran, yeah, it's a bit like the guard thing, right? But they're already absolute bosses,
yeah,
and their capability is so much more, because you can give one like a heavy thunder hammer and suddenly just slaps the lights out of a hive tyrant, or takes a knight out, yeah, and by God, the kill count on that army is absolutely nuts. So
I think Jake was telling me you were the number one Death Watch player in the world definitely at one point.
Yes, 2 years in a row, in fact.
That's quite a claim. quite a massive claim.
Yeah, it was, it's, I'm very happy with it. I'm mainly happy with the fact that I'd placed, I think it was 11th globally, that's across incredible, all factions.
Yeah, that's incredible.
With just Death Watch, and then 4th in the UK behind the likes of Malik and Manny.
Yeah.
Using just Death Watch, and this is it. I've done it. This is all I want.
Pinnacle.
I don't care about being first. Frankly, I'm not that bothered that I was, you know, 4th is very high, but I would have been happy with, you know, 20th or whatever, if I'm just using Death Watch. So super happy with that. And then 2 years on the trot with Death Watch. The second year, I didn't want to win Best in Faction Death Watch.
Okay.
But the LVO, the Las Vegas Open, rolled back their rules date, to the point where I was like, I can't run any of the new armies I want to run, so I'll just run Death Watch. And then it's a massive event, so the points ended up getting me best in faction, which I'm not complaining about. It's a nice, it's a nice trophy.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, so yeah, very happy with that. But I don't want to. I'd like somebody else to win it, because I think best in factions are one of the most valuable trophies that a player can win in the hobby, right?
Yeah,
the right kind of player, you know. So I don't want to take the opportunity away from someone that's worked really hard on Death Watch winning that just because I've got more experience and play more tournaments perhaps than they do. And obviously I'm fortunate enough to go to the Las Vegas Open, which is worth so many points.
Yeah.
Anyway, that if you can't go to the Las Vegas Open, sometimes that ranking is beyond your reach.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But someone out there needs to smash this Death Watch thing, and I'll keep my eye on you.
Yeah, you should just play other things. GC look all there, just incredible at the moment. Just take those.
No, that's not how I roll. I refuse.
That's a huge feat. Because, I mean, Death Watch haven't always been... I know that they're sort of coming into 10th. They're supposed to be all right at the moment. I know they've got an okay...
They're good, all right. Yeah.
They've never been necessarily there. See, to be getting 4th in the UK... Like, it's incredible, like a really, really massive achievement.
It's very cool, and I think that the coolest part, which you don't really get to share with other people, they don't really get to see it, but is the when you get to the sort of top end of the competitive scene, and there's names that you start to recognise, you see them more and more often, and then you get this air of respect because people see, oh, it's Michael with the Death Watch. Like that when you realise that the top end players know and are aware of you and are wary of you, that feels very powerful.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was very powerful. Sure. So Steve was, I think it was like a tryout for Team England, and they had a team event going on up north where most of them are based.
Yeah.
And a couple of the players had to drop from his team, which he stepped up to be captain of his team. And then he invited me along to join the team just to step in last minute, a couple of weeks before it. And Ben Jones as well, one of the other VT guys.
Yeah.
Excellent player, solid guy. And then we went there and I beat some of the Team England players while I was at the team event and with Death Watch.
Nice.
And it was just like, cool, I've made my mark now. I'm happy, you know.
You're known.
I'm known, exactly. And yes, I've got some names. I've taken some names.
For sure.
I don't want to disrespect them by telling people.
They know who they are if they listen. Yeah, you know you've been beaten by Mike. Yeah, and it's Death Watch.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic. I've really enjoyed that side of things, yeah.
Yeah. And obviously it gives you a lot of credibility in sort of the stuff you do with VT as well, because you're effectively saying, well, you were up in the top 10 in the UK and before in the UK, so people are like, yeah, I want to learn from the best. So it gives you that credibility.
Yeah, exactly. I like the idea of championing people using the army they want to use and doing well with it. That's the most important thing to me, is not hiding behind the barrier of your faction being not that good.
Unless you're a Votan player right now, in which case I'm sorry for your loss.
I looked at trying to make them work, but the problem is if you swap a unit out, there isn't something to put back in. They don't have the range. They don't have the range of miniatures yet.
Poor Jake. So,
yeah, poor old Jake.
They'll get there again, I'm sure. GW will know how they are. I'm sure people winning with them, but...
Yeah. We'll get new miniatures for them as well, and I'm sure that will change everything, absolutely everything.
I hope so. I've bought some that are like I always plan they're going to be like my show army, so I've been building them really slowly, and I kind of focused on my Chaos Knights, because coming into 10th, I was like, I want my Chaos Knights to be the sort of main thing, so I've built those up, but... Yeah, I need to start painting them again. So when the new ones come out, I've got an excuse to buy them and add them to the army.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, they're great really minis. Cool. Absolutely incredible army. Like beautiful minis. And
they are. They really are. Yes, I'm looking forward. I'm hoping that they'll do. I mean, they've got right that kill team set with the jump pack guy in it.
Yeah,
they've got to do some jump pack Votan.
That'll be really cool.
I hope they do like a bit like the Admech sterilizers, one of the fly guys. They do like a shooty version and then a combat version. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, and I guess you've got like the berserkers, like you can kind of combine their melee weapon type stuff, because they've got a bit like, have they got the axes or the fists?
Yeah, they've got the axes and the fists. Yeah. I think the knuckle dusters of the Garn kill team put that on a guy with a jump pack and just send them in.
Just throwing angry dwarves with big gloves on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what we all want, yeah, for sure. Okay, I talked a little bit earlier about sort of ET moving towards AOS. Has anything driven you guys towards doing that?
So it's difficult to say, right? Because me and Steve, we're playtesters and previewers. Yep. So we knew the 10th was coming. And we knew that there was going to be a period of time where people were no longer interested in 9th. They're interested in 10th. But that period of time, we can't actually release 10th content because we're under NDA.
Yeah.
So having some kind of content to throw that few through and also to still build interest in the channel as we go. And that was one of the reasons for Age of Sigmar. Another reason is for us to jump into it and have another system that is kind of an escape from 40K.
Yeah.
Because it's nice to have a different game to play. It's why I got back into Lord of the Rings and still play it recently is because if I'm ever tired of 40K, which I'm not at the moment because we've got a new edition, then I can jump into a little game of Lord of the Rings and get absolutely destroyed because I haven't kept up with whatever's the most competitive option.
Yeah.
But so Age of Sigmar, we looked at it. We were like, okay, let's do Age of Sigmar. I went and got myself a free guild, a Cities of Sigmar army. And Seb, who is our main editor and actually my brother, he absolutely loves Skaven because we played Vermintide together.
Yeah.
So he started a Skaven army and he was well into Age of Sigmar, but couldn't find the inspiration to do 40K.
Okay.
So we played some games and it was a lot of fun. It was very different. Super fun, super thematic. You can relate a little bit more to Sigmar because it's like people with guns or bows or swords. And it was a lot of fun. But we recorded 3 battle reports, 4 actually, and 3 of them got corrupted in data. So you'll never see them, unfortunately.
Oh, that sucks.
And one of them we never had a chance to release because 10th got announced and unfortunately our release schedule got taken over. So we've still got one in the bank.
Do you think you'll ever go back to it and bring it back into the sort of writing stuff?
Definitely intending to. I think once the 10th sort of train is manageable, we'll throw some Sigmar in there. And, of course, things like Lord of Rings and all that. Sigmar's very interesting at the moment because my Cities of Sigmar army is no longer usable because it's got all of the old Empire models in it.
Yeah.
Which are being dropped from Sigmar, which is fine because it means that when Old World comes out, we have an Empire army, so I'm not too down about it. Steve's decided he's going to do Cities of Sigmar with the new models.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, fine then, Steve. I guess I won't. So I will look at something else. I do have a Sylvaneth army in the works.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Got to love them trees.
Yeah.
So we'll see where we go with that. But definitely excited to play more Sigmar.
Okay. Sort of all the guys, people at VT sort of interested in it, or is there quite a small pool that will play it?
So Steve's played a bit, but could never have enough time to like really get into it. So he's played a bit. Seb's all over it. I play it occasionally. Jake plays it when it happens to be convenient. Yeah. He doesn't really have his own army for it. So he'd use a studio one.
Yeah, the man who hates painting, uses the studio.
Yeah,
what a surprise.
And then we've got Jordan and Kobe recently joined us.
Yeah.
And they've got a Sigmar army each. So we did have a couple of Sigmar gaming days, me, Seb, Kobe, and Jord. Yeah.
It was Kobe's first game on stream last night, wasn't it?
It was, yes. Yeah, so he's Jordan's brother. So it's a bit strange we've got a double brother situation going on. But they're both absolute legends, and they've done so much to help VT. It's all very understated, but they've been fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, I didn't manage to catch it all, but from what I saw, he was doing really well for a first stream. He was doing really well.
So. He was. He said afterwards, "I'm just playing 40K.
Yeah,
I'm just enjoying the time."
Completely took it in his stride.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I guess it always. I've never done one, but I guess it's probably a bit weird playing in that style because obviously it's one of those ones where you're kind of talking through everything that you're doing. And my friend, he does it a lot. Like I love playing with him because he will always talk through his turn.
Yeah.
to do it in the way that you guys do it, and you're kind of like, you know, helping each other, because obviously you're doing a little bit of like training here and there with it as well. Yeah. It must be quite a weird way of playing 40k for a new person coming into it.
Yeah, I suspect so. But I think once you set like how the dynamic is, you know, like Kobe's obviously a newer player, or rather he's a less experienced player.
Yeah.
And Steve's a more experienced player. We try to have some of those dynamics going on when we play on stream, because we want that coaching experience for everyone to see what it's like. But for players, well, for me particularly, I tend to find that all of the games of 40K are kind of like that. Not in a like I'm having to coach people kind of way, but in a I tell people what's happening and explain everything to the fullest. I'll warn people before they get gotchaed by something in particular. Yeah, you know, help people according to their needs and stuff. Because I don't enjoy winning any other way, to be honest.
Yeah. For me, it's definitely the best way to play. Like I said, my mate did it, and it was probably one of the things that I spoke with Jake about. Oh, God, Jake was like episode 3 for me. It was ages ago. Like it's been like half a year since I spoke to Jake. But yeah, it was really good chatting with him and him talking about that and about like setting up for a game and saying, well, I've got these things that I can do and sort of setting out that. So it's not like you get into a game, you go, oh yeah, my like big one for Knights at the minute is, oh, I can advance and charge my Rampager, and I spend a command point, and I go through all that terrain. And you're like, oh, and now I've got a Rampager in my face turn one.
So,
like I say, you don't kind of want to win that way. If it comes up and you can do it, excellent. But not everybody's got the opportunity to go and read every index or codex as it was and know everything about it. So just,
that's the thing. That is the biggest thing, is I don't expect anyone to know as many rules as I have to maintain.
Yeah.
Or fortunately have the memory to maintain.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot.
It's, I don't know where I put it all from. I'll tell you the names of stratagems, not even what they do. I'll tell you the name of the stratagem, which nobody even needs to remember.
No. That's just stupid names in ninth as well. So done well there.
But yeah, you know, if something like the Rampage, for example, you're always going to tell your opponent that's what this does in this army. You know?
Yeah.
I'm telling you now, because if you don't want
to be in your face,
it's going to happen unless you do something about it. And when the time comes, you can't complain because I've told you already exactly what it does.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that deal. And, you know, I'll usually jump in if someone is about to make a very silly mistake. Yeah. But if there's like a good play, I'm not going to give away my game plan. I've got to try and win the game anyway, right? But there's some situations where it's just, the game is literally, it is over if you do this. I think I can win anyway. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you. And let people make mistakes. They'll learn from them. But if it's something that's going to ruin the gaming experience, then you got to tell them.
Yeah, it's a game. It's a hobby. Like people do it for enjoyment. If someone's going to hate it and not enjoy the game because of it, why would you want to do that? I don't know. Some people might get kicks from it, but it's not for me. That's for sure.
No.
Obviously, you play a lot of competitive, a lot, way more than probably quite a lot of people. Have you, going into 10th, have you seen any particular shifts in the way that competitive is compared to 9th? Or has it stayed sort of vaguely the same?
So I do want to level with people. I don't actually play that many competitive games. There's been previous misconstrued. I'm usually good with words, but
it's getting late. Yeah, it's fair.
Yeah, we don't play games every week. Like me and Steve don't play prep for tournaments. Like spend a day playing three games. You know, there's some people like Art of War, for example, who literally live in a house where they're competitive players.
Yeah.
Play 15 games a week. We don't have that luxury. Unfortunately, because we're running Vanguard Tactics. But in terms of actually going to events, I did a lot of them. I kind of dropped off to prepare for 10th, and I'm only now warming up the engines again. So I've only been to one tournament in 10th edition, but I do have my ears to the ground with other people that have been there and what the competitive stuff is. A lot of it is kind of what we predicted from what we'd seen before and not been able to implement. The competitive scenes, it's difficult right now. And I would understand if a lot of regular competitive players feel a little bit down about 10th edition. There are problems that do need to be fixed. 10th edition is a more fun game than 9th at a certain level.
Yep.
Once you get into that really optimized lists, trying to win a tournament level, the game stops being as fun.
Yeah.
And not as fun as those kind of games were in 9th, right? Because what you got is you got some factions, and this is, I'm not going to steal the quote from him, but Matt Laura, one of our American coaches, said this, and I agree with him totally. Some factions out there are launching nukes at each other,
yeah.
while other factions are still trying to find out which of their sticks is the pointiest.
yeah, that's a really good analogy. Yeah.
Exactly, right? You know, there's probably half the factions, if not more, that are in one group and they play well together. And then you've got maybe 8 to 10 factions that do not play well with the others because they absolutely destroy them, but play okay against each other. So it's a difficult job trying to work out how we can fix it.
Yeah.
But we are trying, and we just hope that people can bear with the fact it's a new edition, that it will eventually be resolved.
Yeah.
It's just going to take time. And, of course, remember that you're playing the game to... Well, I mean, different people have different things they play the game for, and I can't hold other people to my standards. But if you play the game for fun and for socials, don't take the double Wraith Knight. Don't take the
100
Gene Stealer Nier fights. You know, take the cool stuff in there that's not as good. Make it interesting. Challenge yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... That's what I can say.
I think that's really fair. And it's one of those things, it's not even just a new edition. It's a complete reset. When you looked at obviously 8th going into 9th, you could argue that 9th was kind of an 8.5 more than anything. But like 10th is a total reset, and not everything's going to work.
It's pretty different. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. It's pretty different. So in terms of competitive scene, I'm not expecting to do as well as I did in the past couple of seasons, especially not for the first 6 months of the game, because I'm not interested in playing any of the armies in that top bracket, and I don't think that there's currently skill can bridge the gap.
Unfortunately.
I don't think that with my guard army I could beat, you know, I couldn't beat Eldar. I mean, it depends on the pilot, right?
Yeah.
You know, but the majority, your average player with Eldar or with Gene Stealer Cult that knows how the army works would probably beat me. That's just unfortunately how it is. And we're looking to change that, obviously, balance those slates and everything. But I will still enjoy the game nonetheless. I played Gene Stealer Cult at the first tournament I went to after winning 3 games with my Death Watch, with Eisenhorn in the list. All right?
Nice.
Cheeky. I just finished reading his books. They're fantastic. Okay. And I got absolutely destroyed in 2 turns. But I still enjoyed it. Like, the guy was nice. And the army... I found a lot of it funny. Sometimes I just find it funny how stupidly strong stuff is.
Yeah.
And I learned so much from it as well. So it was good. But again, so my opponent was a little bit grumpy about the fact that their army was too strong and they weren't getting to play 40k that event. The only thing I can say is that, you know, you chose to play that army.
Yeah.
Event. If you're not getting fun out of the experience, why'd you take that army? Take, I don't know, Pure Strain Gene Stealers or something else that's not as good in the cult list and then enjoy the event more.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't complain about not enjoying the army if you're going to take the most busted stuff. But, yeah, I had fun. That was with the Death Watch. That was good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I played a tournament. My first sort of singles tournament. I played a 1 doubles tournament before in 9th. Had a lot of fun with it. Obviously, sort of playing with a mate. It's a really sort of casual thing. Played my first sort of proper tournament and lost all 3 games. Got pretty resoundingly beat in my first one. I was playing my Chaos Knights, and I took a Tyrant, Rampager, Abominant, and then a Stalker Executioner. So certainly not an optimized list. And if I had my way, I wouldn't have had the War Dogs and never had another big knight. I wanted to play the big mets.
Yes. Yeah.
My dice rolls were horrendous. I try really hard not to blame it on dice rolls, but all 3 of my opponents apologized for my dice rolls. That's how it went. But I sort of came out of that and I felt really despondent about it. I was like, I just kind of wanted to go play my big knights and have some fun. But I kind of was like, well, mechanics was would drive me towards a certain list design. But then I kind of took a step back from that, and then the next day I was actually, well, you know what, my parents were really, really, really nice. They were all really cool. Sat down and chatted about with all of them afterwards and before stuff like that about other stuff, and all really, really cool people. I got to go and play big robots and fire really big guns and see really cool things happen. Like my volcano lance took a volcano lance tyrant, just first six shots missed, hitting on threes. I was like, right, okay, this is the day.
Drone.
Seventh shot, got through, hit a land raider, wounded it. It was in cover, rolled a six to save, and I was like,
nice.
Yeah, I mean, cool. It then tied me up in combat for like three turns. I was like, this, like, at the time, you're like, that's kind of ruined the game. But then you look back and you're like, actually, that was a really cool moment. Like this land raider like took it and then like saved the day for the Blood Angels and stuff like that. Yeah. So it was like a really like themed around it. It was a really cool thing. Did really badly for me, but like I say, kind of look back and went, actually, I enjoyed the social aspects of it. I got to meet like there was quite a lot of people who didn't normally necessarily play at that venue that were coming over from sort of different areas of the sort of Southwest. So it was nice to sort of meet some new people and see some new armies and stuff like that, especially in 10th. Like playing Necrons, Rampagers bounce against blocks of 20 Necron Warriors with a reanimator behind them for some reason.
Yep.
You can only do like kill 10 models and they'll bring back 12.
Yep. Yeah, nice.
But yeah, it's like you sort of say, if you look for the right reasons to enjoy it, you will enjoy it rather than going to do. Well, I mean, everybody gets to enjoy it. It's almost going and steamroll everybody, and that's what they get enjoyment out of. It's their game. It's their whole game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Before I sort of move on from Warhammer, I have you on the podcast, so I'm going to have to ask you this. You're a very skilled player, as we sort of talked about. Have you got sort of one or maybe a few sort of particular things that you've picked up while you've been playing that have had the biggest impact on your ability to sort of play the game?
Ooh. Good question. My ability to play the game and any tips I can carry across. So, I mean, one of the most powerful tools I have is actually my memory. I think I've mentioned this a couple of times.
Yeah.
I have kind of like an encyclopedic knowledge of 40K. So knowing, I don't ask as many questions as I would expect people to have to need to ask to consider threat ranges and stuff like that. So I'm fortunate in that I don't have to use my brain space for a lot of other things because I work in Warhammer as well now.
Yeah.
So that's been great. Preparation is always massive, I think. So having things like cheat sheets, if I want to take a tournament seriously, I will have a cheat sheet. And for most of my Death Watch playing times, I did have one. And Tyranids, I played a lot of Tyranids competitively to high levels as well. And the cheat sheet is basically just a reminder of each phase, an ability, and then it goes into such detail to say that, oh yes, remember to move your characters within 3 inches for the the 9th edition, like Lookout Sir and stuff. And then like, oh, remember to get out of denial range if you're going to do a psychic power, or remember to stay within 6 ready for your next turn's command abilities. I think probably the easiest thing to improve on is maybe that next turn thing. I think a lot of people play the game without considering the next turn. So if you start to think, where is this unit going to be in 2 turns, rather than I need to go and do this now, that is a huge step, absolutely huge step. And when I'm playing with an army like Death Watch, where I quite literally only have 5 units, I need to know where they're going to be over the course of the game. So that's one of them. I think also analyzing how you think a game, the interaction is going to go. So how the tempo and how your army works against the opponent's one. Do you have to go towards them? Are you going to be able to force them to engage with one of your units? And then an understanding of the meta and being able to change a few tools in your toolbox to meet that demand. So there are a few things. Yeah. So preparation, a little bit of game theory, which, by the way, you know, Academy coming soon, we can sort you out. And I forgot what the last one is because I tried to do that plug.
Meta,
yes. Yeah. Understanding that you're going to have to adapt. And, yeah, so there's a few little tips for you. Yeah.
Very good tips. a little spoiler into the academy, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Soon, because I do keep seeing the little things pop up on my Instagram and stuff like that. And
yes, yeah, very soon.
Yeah, look, it'd be interesting to see your sort of guys' take on that and see. Yeah.
Yeah, so in case anyone doesn't know, I actually write pretty much, well, most of the course. So I create a lot of the downloads as well and plan the lessons and things. There's the same number of modules as there are in ninth.
Okay.
The number of lessons is about the same as well. So it's not like a 10th hasn't got that much simpler. Let's be real.
They said it's simple, but not
it's simplified, but not simple.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's what it was, yeah.
And I'll be honest, when every single unit has its own ability,
yeah,
that's not simple. But there's so much to actually dive into. It's been really interesting exploring that. And I'm looking forward to sharing it with people.
Yeah, it's not something that I've ever done. I was never really sort of into competitive sort of coming in. It was always really casual, but I sort of said I'm going to try and do more of that stuff sort of going into the game. So maybe it's something that if I'm losing every game that I'm playing at the moment, there we go. See if you can help me.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, like, it's not even competitive focused necessarily. Yeah. Like, our whole ethos is to keep people playing 40K. Like, you know, you can get down and out about things and you can drop away from the hobby, but we want you to stay in it, play the games, keep connected with people, and that kind of thing. And sometimes all you need is a little bit of a push, improve your scores, and you start enjoying the game a bit more. Make the most out of your units, understand what you're doing. Everybody wants to feel like Gilliman if they're using Gilliman on the table, right? But, you know, we want you to be the commander that is leading that army.
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than the dice gods.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll move on sort of from the Warhammer as a game, sort of talk more community sort of content side of things. So you've been with VT for quite a while now.
Two years.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think VT were kind of one of the... There was a few YouTubers that I started watching, so I came in late. So yeah, Mini War Gaming, the big one, Tabletop Tactics, and then you guys were sort of the other. So yeah, 2 years. That's gone really quick. Really quick.
Yes. Yes. So,
but what? How did you join the team? Sort of originally come about.
Okay. So, life lesson here. So I was in teaching, and then I went into. I had some family issues. I went into private tutoring. I did private tutoring, and I was like, you know, I don't mind doing this job, but it'd be cool to do something else. I was watching people like Tabletop Tactics and, you know, watching them for years. I'd been going to tournaments still during this time, and I'd met Steve a couple of times.
Yeah.
But not really talked to him. And I was like, right, I'm going to do it. And then huge props to my partner. She pushed me as well. She was like, go for it. And I wrote an email. An application email. There weren't any job postings. So wrote an application email, sent it across. Said, look, I see what you're trying to do here. I can add a lot to the value of this company. Here's a few directions you could go. Here's what this could become. And I actually sent one to Tabletop Tactics as well. But that didn't end up going anywhere, unfortunately. But that's fine. I'm here now.
And yeah, you are. It's just possibly a better place for you. So.
Yeah, exactly. So Steve was like, thanks. We're not really looking for anyone right now. But appreciate you taking the time to email me like this. Would you like to come over for a game? Maybe we can get a feel for what you like. And, and you never know, in the future, we might have a place for you. So I went over and we had a chat. And it's quite interesting, actually, because my old team had one bad apple in it that we were all desperately trying to correct.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, as soon as we took our eyes off him, he did the dirty. And then he did the dirty on me in a game as well. We were both teammates, and I was like, "That's it, I'm done. I'm done with this guy. I'm not dealing with this." So chatted to Steve about that, because obviously the sportsmanship thing's very important.
Yeah,
and it's very important to me as well. And then we played a game, and it was all good, fun, chill. And then, you know, went back and went back to Reading, where I ended up staying after uni, And then I moved back with family for a bit, and it was quite local actually to where Steve's studio was.
Okay.
So we were still in contact, and he said he wanted to, you know, I was like, I'm in the area, I can give you a hand with stuff if you want. Because like with streaming, I can be a voice on the deck, or
yeah,
I can help you come up with content ideas, that kind of thing. And then it all kind of started from there and got more and more involved, came on part-time whilst I still was doing private tutoring from home, and then eventually full-time.
Nice.
And I think full-time was, yeah, almost two years ago, October, a couple of years ago, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, been killing it ever since.
Yeah, really have. It feels like VT sort of really expanded in that 2 years, because there seems to be a lot more of you guys in there, and it's a lot more variety in who you've got in and stuff like
it's,
that.
It's very cool, and I'm very proud of the team and Steve.
Yeah.
For the amount that we've achieved with so few people. I mean, it's been three people doing the whole thing for a very long time, and only now have we suddenly got 5-6 people that are able to contribute. And it's been an incredible journey, and it will continue to be, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. I can only see it sort of getting stronger and better. And yeah, obviously, I think you guys are probably like one of the sort of premier sort of teaching communities, definitely in the UK, I would say.
Yeah.
You've got like a really strong following behind you. Yeah, so I can only see it going from strength to strength, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I really love the fact that it's not that competitively driven. So I think there's sort of stuff you're talking about, like the sportsmanship and enjoying the game and stuff like that. And I feel like that ethos really comes across, like in the games that you play on live stream or your videos, stuff like that. But even then, when you sort of see like Steve and you guys on social media, it really comes across, and it's a really, really strong ethos that I think should be taken more widely across the community.
Thanks. Yeah, exactly. I agree. And looks like a lot of other people do too. So
yeah,
we'd expect it, right? It's kind of like human nature to not be an absolute dick when you're playing with plastic soldiers. But it's good to know that those standards are being maintained, and therefore enjoy your hobby to the fullest.
I mean, I think you see sort of a lot of the non-dickish people in real life, but I feel like the internet's always the dangerous. Like, you go on Facebook and some of the most toxic people exist on that site.
Yeah. Don't even get started on Reddit.
Yeah, I know. I avoid Reddit like the plague.
That is
Facebook. I'm still on, honestly, but yeah, it's some of them are horrendous. You kind of, and so to see, go on any of your live streams, the community that sits on that chat and then interacts, obviously, with your guys that sit on the deck and stuff like that, it's such a nice, wholesome place. Everyone's sort of trying to help with rules and like joining the conversations and stuff like that. To do that in an internet environment, it must be. It's credit. It's a real credit to have built that community. So yeah, well, congratulations, well done.
Thank you. That means a lot. Yeah.
Okay, so I'll go back to the tournament stuff a little bit. You sort of saying that even before sort of VT, you're doing a lot of tournament stuff. You've been in for quite a while. Do you feel like your engagement in tournaments or your experience of tournaments has changed since you've become that sort of more well known face that's been associated with VT?
Yeah, I guess it has. I mean, so I've played tournaments for a very long time now, actually. Possibly longer than Steve, I think. But I think I've always had that attitude of we're here to play a game. I'm going to do my best, but I'm going to laugh the hell at whatever some of these outcomes are. And I've met a few people in the community that are a bit like that as well before joining VT. And, you know, I think people that have played me before know that that's who I am.
Yeah.
Even before I got involved with VT. But the difference now is that people that do know who VT are, they see me, obviously they say hello and it's lovely. And if I'm playing against them, they know that they're going to have a good time. They also probably feel a little intimidated.
I can imagine.
I apologize for that, but at least you're playing a competitive player that's going to be nice about it.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to learn something. That's the main thing. You're going to learn something from me, because I always strive to teach someone something if I'm going to win that game. So, yeah, the attitude's changed. If people don't know who I am, but they see a VT shirt, Sometimes it's kind of like, oh, they're competitive, they're wearing a team shirt. And I have had that before, at which point I'm kind of like, when they mention it, I kind of explain the whole deal. And then after the game, they're like, so I had Warhammer Fest recently, played someone who's not really heard of us. And he was kind of a little bit, you know, skeptical that I might be like a try hard because I had this top on.
Yeah.
And we played the game. And after the tournament, he came up and said, I really enjoyed that game. That was one of my favorite games. Even though you absolutely destroyed me.
Yeah.
We had so many good moments. And I'd love to play you again. And, you know, that's a big difference, is a lot of people coming up to you, talking to you, knowing that they're going to have a good game. And also the support is huge. Yeah, the support is incredible. When, you know, when I'm at a tournament and people come along and say, go on, we're all rooting for you.
Yeah.
And when they see that I've got like 60 Hormigants and, you know, some Lictors, Death Leaper and stuff, and people just like, we want you to win because you're showing them how we want it to be done.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking what you want, you're going to win. So, yeah. Attitudes. I think the attitude's a lot better now.
Okay.
I'd like to think that the attitude in the community, we've contributed to it.
I'm sure, yeah, definitely.
The idea of why we're there. But back in the day, there was a lot more cutthroat stuff happening, a lot less necessarily interaction between players, okay. if that makes sense. It was a bit more, you know, playing this game, going to win it, and I'm going to talk to you while I'm fighting you, essentially, rather than this is our collective experience for the next 3 hours.
Yeah.
Buckle up. So, yeah, I think the competitive scene has changed. I think it's got more fun. It's got cooler people in it.
Yeah.
And it's grown massively since, to be fair.
Absolutely
massively since. So,
yeah. Do you think that's a factor of like social media making a lot of those sort of top players interact with them, with each other a lot more, but then interact with the sort of wider community more?
Yeah, I think it definitely, having people see these top players and sort of emphasizing with them a little, empathizing with them. I think also it's got a huge amount to do with social media and the public view of some of these nerdy hobbies, quotation marks, being more accepted. And like, you know, video gaming becoming more widely accepted, and then, you know, role play games like D&D and stuff, and Warhammer and board games becoming much more widely accepted. Like, I feel like the board game scene is massive now. It's pretty much accepted that there's going to be a board games club or cafe in every single town, village or city, right?
Yeah, it'd be strange for there not to be one these days,
Exactly, and I feel like that wasn't a thing back in the day, and so that acceptance has built up where people like, you know, I'm proud that I have this collection of however many miniatures. This is who I am. I'm going to go to these tournaments and spend 2 days playing Warhammer.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big reason. And then some of these YouTube channels, like Tabletop Tactics, for example, they've done big things because some of them used to go to tournaments.
Yeah.
So they kind of were showcasing the kind of people that you might meet at tournaments. You know, and I'm sure, you know, back in the day, people would love to play someone like Lawrence from Tabletop Tactics or Beard and stuff. And thinking, oh, these guys are really fun and they go to tournaments. Well, that means tournaments must have fun players in them. So I think they've done a bit for it as well.
Yeah, definitely. On the nerdy side of things and the kind of acceptance, I will definitely shout out to the video that Stephen did with Dave from Mini Wargaming.
Yes.
Such an incredible video where, Stephen really sort of opens up about sort of his past. I'm not going to spoil it, people. Absolutely go and check that video out.
Go watch it.
Yeah, it's so incredible. It really sort of brings together everything you were sort of saying, and that part of it there is, and for someone like, it's weird, for someone like Stephen and Dave, who are generally, you sort of look at Stephen, he's a big macho bodybuilder guy.
Yes.
And then him sort of breaking that, his sort of emotions down was really good. And hopefully it kind of, it opens up, more of kind of what you were talking about there, people seeing it as a, it should be a widely known, it should be a more widely accepted thing.
Absolutely. It should be just as widely accepted as football.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just another hobby, right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe one day we'll get paid several billions for it. But
if only.
One can dream.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd ever go to Saudi, but that's...
I don't know. Miami?
Miami would be nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you get to LVO, so you should get to Las Vegas.
Galaxy? I don't remember what the name of the team that Beckham went to.
LA Galaxy. Now it's got Inter Miami. Yeah,
and there's a whole bunch of has-beens that have gone there now.
Oh, Messi, yeah. Messi's over there and absolutely hammering it. So, yeah. that'd be quite nice. I'll record podcasts from the beach, definitely.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. We've kind of talked about this a little bit more, but obviously VT's grown quite substantially fairly recently. Have you sort of got any advice for people who are looking to sort of grow their community or sort of their following and do something similar to you guys?
Biggest piece of advice is don't reinvent the wheel. Look at what other people are doing. Reach out to them and learn from it and use it. So Steve went over and visited Play on Tabletop.
Yeah,
and they were incredibly kind hosting him and giving him express permission to just basically use their stream setup. Because they're fantastic, absolutely fantastic on Tabletop.
Yeah.
And to be able to learn from them is such an experience and has made such a difference. And when Steve came back from them and literally came back, we were both in the office and he said, right, we're going to move all these cameras around and everything.
I noticed that actually. That was something I noticed on stream yesterday. Yeah.
We were well up for that. And we spent the entire day moving everything around and checking angles and thinking about what we need to order. And yeah, so learn from people who are already successful. You're still forging your own path, even if you use ideas other people have come up with. So that's definitely one of the other ones. Yeah, that research, obviously hard work.
Yeah.
Nothing falls into your lap. I mean, I don't think people realise quite how hard Steve has worked for this legacy.
Yeah, I think that's just across the board. When you look at like social media people and YouTubers and stuff like that, it was certainly something that I never perhaps realised sort of coming into the sort of podcast is there's a lot of effort that goes behind, and it's obviously this stuff, making it and making it, that's the fun bit that sort of everyone sees and it looks cool. But then there's the amount of hours that go into behind it. I'm doing this as a hobby, so I barely spend anything. Like Steven's turned it into his life and then by extension, you guys.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the amount of hours that go into editing something, the prep, setting up shots, planning everything. Yeah. And, you know, there's so many things that Steve does. It's a business as well. So you've got all the whole business side of it that Steve is managing as well. You've got accounts, you've got, you know, all of that stuff in there. You've got projections for business, all of that stuff. And then on top of that, traveling for all these collaborations.
Yeah.
Staying on top of trends, predicting what's going to be popular, obviously filming, scripting, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
He's even working on some other secret stuff too.
Exciting.
Playtesting, previewing, all of that stuff. And then constantly trying to think, you know, how can we balance the game? How can we make people enjoy 4K more? And all that stuff, and then all the people we're trying to maintain communication with, but unfortunately, there's just so many people that we can't always maintain that with. But there's a lot going on, and one day I hope that Steve will get a full night's sleep.
Never. No, he seems so motivated. He'll sort of get everything, so it's all sorted. He'll get all the ducks in the row. He'll be like, right, okay, what do I do next to stop me from sleeping?
He seems
like that kind of guy.
Mm.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so last question on this sort of section. Obviously, you've said this. You get to meet so many cool people, not just from this community, but sounds like PlayStation marketing managers and all sorts. What would you sort of consider to be your... This is quite a broad question. What would you consider your favourite thing about the community to be?
Respect? Is that a Is that an answer that I can give you?
Yeah, that's a good answer.
I think respect, because you meet some of these people and you don't know who they are, and yet they treat you with complete respect. Mm, and they don't look down on you. They talk to you like another human being that loves the hobby.
Yeah.
You know, regardless about, as I said, like, you know, if you've got someone that's super wealthy or someone that's very successful, I've not met a single person in the hobby that is like a dick in real life. Like when they're talking to you as a person.
Yeah.
I haven't met anyone that's like that. You know, not even some of the ones that I don't like as a 40K player.
Yeah.
Even those people in person, they're good guys, that, you know, and there's no like presumption either. So, you know, ego is something that you see in competitive sports and stuff, but there's a lot less ego in some of these people. So, for example, I was at a tournament and I had a chat and we had a few games with Maxine.
Yep.
And Katie as well. And, you know, even though they're relatively influencer famous, there's no air of ego or anything from them. And like Steve, the first time I met him, there was no real sense of, you know, ego from him either.
Yeah.
So it's very cool. The respect everybody gives you, time as well.
Yeah.
You know, people will stand there and talk to you about 40K, or they'll answer your questions about 40K for a while, even though they've got other things and people and kids. Like, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, the respect out there is massive.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely echo everything that literally this podcast is built on that. So obviously you probably have a million or one other things to be doing with 10th and the way the VT's growing, but you've sort of spent the time to come on here and have a chat. And I found that across the board. Maxine is probably one of my favourite people in the community. And she was like episode 2. Yeah, I think she was like my second episode, something like that. But it's just like, yeah, she's got a really, really good following and stuff like that. And I kind of reached out to her and she was like, yeah, let's do it. Same with you. It's kind of like, yeah, this sounds like fun. I like to talk Warhammer. We'd like to do podcasts. Let's do it. And so many cool people, Chef, like literally the last episode that went out at the time of recording this was the episode with Chef. And honestly, the amount of listens that I got like blew everything else out of the water. But for someone like him, who's been around Tabletop Tactics basically since the start, again, he was just like, yeah, let's chat. I think I was on the phone to him for like 2.5 hours in the end or something silly.
Yes.
Someone who's busy. And so, yeah, it's a really, really cool community to talk to, like you and Jake and so many other cool, amazing people. It's been a real joy, and I'm really glad that I made this podcast because of it. And it certainly wouldn't be where it is if it weren't for people like you who are sort of coming onto it and sharing all your sort of stories. So yeah, definitely echo everything you said there.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, obviously you spend a lot of time in the hobby. It's your full-time job. You play it a lot. It's been in your life for a long time. Burnout's obviously a real thing. Everyone gets it. It's a thing that happens. What do you do outside of Warhammer that you don't get burned out by? How do you get away from the hobby?
Mm, good question.
With the little time that you have left.
In recent times, it hasn't been much, but there was a point where I used to play a fair bit of sport. That time's passed, so I used to play a lot of badminton. And football as well, and stuff. So I really enjoyed that side of things. Video gaming's a big de-stressor for me as well.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I do mainly at the moment if I'm not feeling hobby. Other than that, it's read a book and sometimes just chill in the garden. I don't have a garden, but my partner's family has a garden. So when I can, I'll go over there and just sit in the garden, read a book, and chill and not think about Warhammer at all, even though I might be reading the Eisenhorn books, but still.
It's different, yeah.
It's different. So that, you know, going on trips to see, you know, museums and National Gallery and all that kind of stuff. That's a really nice way of getting away from the hobby as well. And of course, spending valuable time with the people you love. So that I would say that's mainly the escape. At the moment, it's mostly just the video game side of things.
Okay. What are you playing at the minute?
So at the moment, so I play a lot with my younger brother, Seb, also our editor. And we've been playing a lot of Monster Hunter at the moment.
Oh, cool. Yep.
It is absolutely fantastic game series. Yep. So I love Monster Hunter. Monster Hunter Rise came out on the Xbox not that long ago.
Yeah.
So we've been hammering away at that. And other than that, you know, Ghost Recon. I used to play a lot of Battlefield. So I've got two brothers. And we play a lot of Xbox together and always have done. And my mum used to play Xbox as well. Nice. So,
Real family affair. That's really cool.
It was kind of the way of we were able to connect because me and Seb both went off to uni in different places.
Yeah.
And we would play actually Monster Hunter World.
Yep.
Kind of as a family, as like a hunting group of four, which was very special to us. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. So still playing the video games. And it's good. It's good. It's a nice de-stressor. Instant gratification. Doesn't require a battlefield to be set up in 3 hours. So it's a nice one. Yeah.
Yeah, someone's already done all that work for you and set that battlefield up. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You just finished the Eisenhorn books.
Yes. Yeah.
You've got a thought about what you're going on to next.
Not really. I've got the omnibus for Eisenhorn, and I read that. But I also have the Magos book.
Yep.
The Magos main novel is in the omnibus, but some of the novellas are not. So I was going to work my way through those, but I haven't really had the time to read them. I'm not sure what I'm going to read next. I've got on the shelf, I've got the Severina Rain novel. I have no idea how good that is, but I've got the miniature, so I might, you know, probably read it. I've got the Ultramarines omnibus because I want to understand the army that has such a bad typecast.
Yeah, the poster boys.
Exactly. I've got the Night Lords omnibus. I've read that already, though. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's next. Yeah, I've been recommended the Ravenor and Bequin series because they're sort of part of the Eisenhorn cinematic universe, so to speak, within Warhammer. Cypher's Cain, I think there's a new book for Cypher's Cain that I haven't read yet.
Okay.
So maybe I'll try and get a hold of that because I've read all the previous ones. I think Cypher's Cain and Eisenhorn are probably the two guys from Warhammer that are like,
Inquisitors really sort of intrigued me. I'm resisting trying to build like an Agents of the Imperium army. I love the idea of just having a shitload of Inquisitors and Assassins and just running those because I think it seems like such a fun idea.
Yeah. I've told Games Workshop that if they ever need help writing the Imperium book, I am in. All in.
Yeah, be a lot of fun.
I've not played a game with an Imperial army yet without Eisenhorn and his band of acolytes.
Is he playing well in 10th? Because I've played with Assassins before, but never Inquisitors.
I mean, they're okay. They're not incredible. They're pretty jokes.
Okay.
Especially
that's what I'm looking for.
The Jacaro, because it's just a little monkey that points at things. But in one of the stream games, it kills two raiders in one shot because it kills one, it explodes, and then kills the other one. And it's just like, it's just funny that this thing goes around. And in the tournament, Eisenhorn has like a precision mind bullet shot and sniped the orc hobo, the one that leads the grots. Something sniped him in one shot. That was awesome. And then in other ones, the Jacaro killed like two Rubric Marines. And you're just like,
what's going on? How has this happened?
Cavill, put this in your Eisenhorn series. I want to see an orange orangutan fire a laser beam and kill two Rubric Marines. Yeah, I mean, they're fun. They do actually have some tactical elements, and they catch people by surprise, actually, because they're surprisingly resilient.
I don't think you see them that often either, so it's probably a thing of just not having seen them that often and seeing them around. Yeah. Assassins, I feel like they've kind of always tagged in and out of 8th and 9th.
Well, I definitely recommend running an inquisitorial henchman and an inquisitor. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. It's not that many points either.
Yeah, I've got a little gap in my Dark Angels list at the minute because I've not picked up the Lion yet. So I have to bring some in and paint them up.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, I've got a credit on my Audible. I've read nowhere near the amount of books that most people I speak to have, but I kind of put out a request for recommendations because I've just re-listened to the Lion book for the third time.
Okay.
Because I'm a Dark Angels player and I love that book. It's probably my favourite book. I think I've read like 15 books, or I say read, I've listened to about 15 books so far, or something like that. So really not that many. And it's mainly been the heresy stuff.
I can't get into the heresy stuff, you know.
I've read like the obligatory sort of first three.
Yeah.
And after that, you kind of go, well, where do I go next? And I went, well, I really love Dark Angels. So I've basically just listened to all the Dark Angels books.
I can understand that, yeah. Yeah, if I could get my hands on all the Night Lords ones, I'd probably listen to all of them.
But, yeah. Finally, it gives me that motivation when I'm kind of like, yeah, I'll just put my Dark Angels down for a little bit. I'm a bit bored of painting them. And then I listen to the book again. I'm like, oh, I want to get them. They're really
cool. Yeah. The books and stuff do wonders for painting inspiration. Yeah.
So I've listened to that. Like I say, that's the third time I've listened to that one, which is really bad. I'm listening to the End of the Death Part 1 for the second time. I listened through that. And I was like, I need to listen to that again. That's quite a long book with a lot of different things going on. So listen to that one again.
Yeah.
And I've really enjoyed Necron books, actually. So I've listened to the Reign and Ruin, the two ones that were the relatively new Necron books. They were actually really good. So they
I like Trazin as a character.
The Infinite and Divine, which is Trazin and Oberon.
Oberon, yeah.
So that it's kind of like seeing them clash over millennia because they kind of have this rivalry over millennia. It's a really, really good book. It kind of mixes a bit of funny into it. It's quite a funny book. Seeing sort of two old Khojri men sort of getting a bit annoyed at each other and like they kind of like play pranks on each other, but they're like they're like Necron level pranks of like releasing an entire race into Trazin's like museum to cause ruin and stuff. And you kind of get a better idea about their sort of longevity because like the whole book, without putting any spoilers in, kind of runs alongside like the initial forming of life on a planet all the way through to the planet's destruction. And you kind of go, okay. And that's just like one phase of their life where they're just having a bit of banter with each other. And you're kind of like, okay, that's pretty cool. Mad.
That's really cool.
So yeah, Infinite and Divine is really, really well written and narrated book. The two ones that are the ones I talked about, they're really good. They kind of look a little bit into the Flayer Curse and trying to understand the impact on like Necron society with that.
Yeah.
So it's a really different side to the Necrons that you get to see, and that was really enjoyable. And it wasn't like here's an Overlord; it's kind of like here's a Nomarch, as they call him, that's been like sort of sent away to the fringe worlds of the Necron dynasty and seeing sort of how they interact and stuff like that. So yeah, those are really good books as well.
Mm.
Yeah, so definitely say they're worth a read. Yeah, not sure what to go on to next. I know that they've literally, as of like yesterday or day before, they've just said there's going to be a third End of the Death. So Dan Abbott was sort of saying that he's written all three, so he's written it as one big book, and basically said the only reason it didn't come out as one book is because they're too big. They literally can't print something that big, so they split it into three. So the second one, he said, is going to focus on like Sanguinius and Horus, so the fight between those two, and then the last one will be like the Emperor and Horus. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to those coming out. Yeah, not sure what to do next. Eisenhorn's been sort of put forward to me, and then the Gaunt novels have been.
I've not read those.
So, yeah,
certainly something I'd look at. Yeah,
especially the amount of people that I see sort of on Facebook and stuff like that, and it's supposed to be there's some quite emotional parts in those books, which feels strange from a 40k book where it's like normally here's really big battles. There's a little bit of sort of dialogue about strategy and stuff like that, and then there's more big battles and stuff like that. But yeah, apparently it's quite an emotional. You get quite a lot of good sort of like character development in there and character engagement that really sort of brings you into it. At least that's what the reviews I've had so far from some of the listeners.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, that's sort of the real life side of things, and that was kind of my last core question. I've got one last question, mm-hmm. and this normally goes one of two ways, so we'll see how it goes. If you could pick one person in the community, they don't have to be content creators or anything like that, they don't have to be influencers, they can just be someone in your group or anything like that, and they were the only person you could play Warhammer with for the rest of time, who would it be?
Well, the only person I could play Warhammer with for the rest of time.
Yeah.
As it stands right now, who would it be? So there's a guy called Dan Gilbert, and we met at uni. We're really good mates. We've since, you know, kind of accepted that we've gone on to do different things and
yeah.
and stuff. And we actually met up last weekend. I've never not enjoyed a single moment of his company. So I played him a lot during lockdown as well. He was like in my social bubble. He would be, yeah, he's like an unsung hero of my story. Nice. I'd pick him. If I had one person I could play Warhammer with forever, I'd play it with him.
Yeah. That's really nice. That's a really, really nice reason. And you've not alienated anybody from VT. So that's
really nice. I've alienated them all.
yeah, they're all now going to hate you. You're going to kick out of VT and exactly. Go play with Dan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Jake listens to this. So yeah, he'll take it personally. That's for sure.
Jake will understand. He's met Dan.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think Dan, I think Jake say. I think Jake said Stephen. I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, now you can go back to Jake and be like, why did you say Stephen instead of somebody else?
Well, that's fine. Wouldn't want him to lose every single time, so you know.
Oh yeah, that's fair, yeah. I mean he's the most handsome man in 40k, so he's won something at least.
Never
so.
Really loses, does he?
Exactly, yeah. So God, yeah, imagine him and Stephen being in the same room all forever. I'm not sure that'd be bearable for anyone.
I don't think Steve would last very long.
Well, that was it. That was my last question, and I really, really appreciate your time and all those sort of answers. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of good fun. Yeah,
you're very welcome.
Obviously, if anybody for some reason doesn't follow Mike or follow VT, obviously you've got your Instagram, so that's VT_Mike_.
Yep.
And then Vanguard Tactics. It's Vanguard Tactics everywhere. I'll put all the links in the description. Yep. But I would be amazed if there was anybody listening that didn't follow you guys over at VT. It's an incredible thing you're doing.
Thank you.
It really brings up the community. So I think you should carry on and carry on doing amazing things.
We will.
It's really good.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much.
No problem. And yeah, I hope that sort of everyone else enjoyed today's show as much as I did. I really enjoyed chatting with Mike, and I hope that sort of everyone's got to know Mike a little bit more. And if you do enjoy it, please do all the obligatory stuff of subscribing or leaving a review, kind of wherever you found the podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can get me over on Instagram at FirstRankFirePodcast, and the same on Threads, because apparently I do that now as well, which is FirstRankFirePodcast as well. And yeah, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode. Bye.